5. The World Before Later On. Yanis Shan Lewin, Wales, January 18th, 2018. Someone up ahead is going to call me a sadist. I put my hands tightly over my ears and I can hear that plain as day. I will be called a sadist by the choir boys in blue and the men in tinfoil hats and the spooks from Groom's Lake, because one thing may look very much like another unless motive is taken into account. They will trot out great reams of psychobabble and the terror of comfortingly orthodox diagnosis, and file me and dismiss me. Throw away the key if they get their wish. Send me down to some cell in their ant farm labyrinth and throw away the key. A bullet to the brain if I am only lucky. Anyway, I uncover my ears again, and all I can hear now is the rain, the soothing winter rain and the voices woven into the rain. The rain, which is, by extension, merely the sea. There is nothing worth hearing that is not the sea. I know that so damn well, like I know the beat of my heart and the moment of my death, and yet I allow myself to be distracted by things that will be said in days yet to come, by all those self-important phantoms of no consequence and no significance. I sit in my grey room in this cottage by the restless sea, and I sit before the looking glass that was my mother's, and I will listen to the sea, not to all those roiling futures that are still being born by my hand and by the will of Father Kraken and Mother Hydra, the indeterminate determination of Uria, the mermaid's whisper, the yelp of waves breaking on basalt boulders down more than 4 billion years. In the mirror, I hold one finger to my lips before I say too much. My skin is the color of fog. My eyes shine like polished copper pennies, and I know they will say that I am a sadist. It shouldn't bother me, but it does. There is nothing in this room but my chair at the center of its maze drawn on the floor, nothing but the looking glass and the drapes that hide the windows, a single bare electric bulb shining above me, and the whisperer in the corner. I won't speak the name of the whisperer, but she has been with me a very long time now, and she knows so many of my secrets. There have been many lovers since her murder, but her jealousy eclipses all those other passions. "Why won't you ever say my name?" she wants to know, and I keep my eyes on my reflection. I keep my eyes on me. "You took so much, but you didn't take my name. Not you, and not the sea, and not all the voices of the sea, and all the sea's many gods. None of you stole my name. None of you were able to do that." I'd cover my ears again, but it wouldn't do any good. The whisperer seeps through mere flesh like water through cheesecloth. I almost tell the whisperer that I never tried to take her name, but there's that cautionary finger to seal my blue lips. Outside it's raining, and it's either daylight or night. And I'm in this room, and I am with the whisperer and my own face in silvered glass, and the certainty that one day they will see me as nothing more than a sadist and a lunatic. "Maximum disruptive contrast," says the whisperer in her roomy, salt rhyme voice. "Countershading, markings of whatever sort, tend to obliterate, to cancel, by their separate and conflicting patterns, the visibility of the details and boundaries of form, and so one thing is mistaken for another, an octopus for a handful of sand and gravel, a fish for a coral branch, a martyr for a sadist. And anyway, what difference does it make to you how they judge the monster that you are?" I want to reply that I'm not a monster any more than I am a sadist. But once I give the whisperer the satisfaction and validation of a reply, well, I know where that always, always leads. Better I seal my lips and keep my thoughts to myself and my eyes on the looking glass and suffer myself to silence. She tells me, "For what you have done, Jehoshiba, they're coming for you. For everything you'll do. You're being hunted again. You should have kept your head down. They thought you were done for. They thought you'd gone away, so much flotsam and jetsam dragged off with the tide. But they know better now." I don't respond. I'm trying to remember what day it is, what day in what year, and I'm wishing it were the day before I led the Whisperer into the icy sea below Torbock Lighthouse and held her head beneath the water until she stopped spitting up bubbles and there was no more breath left in her. Then I might have a little peace, just until the moment of her drowning finds me out. Before the father and the mother, I'm not trying to shirk my duties. I'm only trying to hear myself think. From her corner, the Whisperer laughs and makes a noise like a damp mop slapped against a wall. Be still, I want to say. Be still and be quiet and let me listen to the rain. But I don't say that or anything else. I hold a finger to my lips, and with my other hand, my left hand, I make a fist and clutch the stone become the graven image of my fate and the fate of all my lovers and the rhythm of the tides and the towers of sunken cities. They're coming for you, the Whisperer says again. And they're coming very, very soon, all the way from halfway round the world, and I will not shed a tear. My fisted hand bleeds water, my heart's own stigmata, the mark of Yanthle and Our Lady of Perpetual Midnight. There's a hole in the bottom of the sea, says the Whisperer. And that's where they're going to put you, Jehosheba, for all the things that you've done. There's a hole in the bottom of the sea, the tolling bell, the wine in the rigging. And that's where you'll sleep away the eons, little lobster. The water drips from my fist, the blood that is the water, that is the life, and it spatters the floorboards at my feet. It spatters the lines and causeways of the maze so meticulously painted there. All the world unfolding is in that map. All this present world and all those other past and future worlds, and you only have to know how to read it. With each lover I have learned a little more. With each little life I commend it to the deep. The father and the mother open my eyes that much more to the glory and the wonder and the pageant of twisting, twining movements. Each life that I have taken is strung like pearls within the maze, and every drop of water from my clenched fist will become another pearl. You'll pay for every one of us, the Whisperer promises me. Soon you'll be served your comeuppance for all those sins and stolen lives, and they'll call you a sadist. Even though I have loved them all, and even though I have never taken even an instant's pleasure in their pain. Yes, mutters the Whisperer, even though all that might well be true, you'll pay. You'll see, Jehosheba. On the floor, the salt water that has dripped from my hand rolls to and fro along the maze until it arrives at the moment past when I drowned the Whisperer. It lingers there, while I'm dragging her naked, sodden, limp body from the bay and up under the rocks again. Above us, the foghorn bleats, and just offshore a bell buoy clangs its meaningless answers. The stars wheel overhead, a hurricane of pinpricks in the dome of heaven, and I take great care not to look up. I shiver, bite my bleeding lips, and I do my work, putting it all in motion, so that one day I will sit here in this room before this mirror, so that one day I shall paint a maze upon the floor of this room, so that one day I will place an inconstant, loveless Jonah in the belly of a great fucking fish, so that all will be revealed in the fullness of time and the abyss. There on the rocks beneath Torbuck, I kiss the Whisperer's dead lips. I lay a small white sand dollar on her forehead. I covered each nipple with a limpet, and I arranged a wheel of whelks and periwinkles and marsh snails on her belly. I hid her sex with a kindly handful of knotted rack. I did exactly as I had been instructed. And down in the sea, a million upturned eyes shone their approval. I left her there for the crabs and the gulls and the maggots. I left her there for the tide to drag away to the hungry children of the mother and the father. Within the maze on the floor at my feet, drops of water from my hand roll away from that night to other nights and other sacrifices. And each of them I loved as much as I'd loved the Whisperer in her turn. I sit in my chair and I kneel on sharp limestone at the edge of By Maltraith, and rift in utter darkness 2100 fathoms down. Sitting in my chair before the looking glass, sinking through hero-pelagic depths that have never been insulted and bruised by the scolding insult of the sun, feeding the maze, I am shown everything that has been and all that is still to come. I have opened so many doors, doors within myself and doors in the fabric of creation. I am ushering in the flood. I am waking the sleeper in his ancient sepulchre. A swarm of trilobites and viperfish weave a holy shroud about me. In her corner, the whisperer reminds me what a fool I am, like every other saint who ever lived. I wish I knew the words to banish her. I wish I knew that spell. But even she has a part to play, like the irritating grain of sand to worry the oyster, to grow the pearls that spill from my hand, to roll along the pathways of a maze painted on a floor in a cottage by the sea. The whisperer says, "You should have killed her when you had the chance, my own and gentle salmon. Like you undid me, you should have undone her. Made of her only a torn sin, a shattered lobster pot, a broken oar. Was she really so much more beautiful? Did you really love her so much more?" And I almost reply. I go so far as to open my mouth, and I very nearly speak the words. "I would show you the whole of it, if I were but allowed to do that. Then you'd see. There's a wing on the fly, on the frog, on the bump, on the log, in the hole in the bottom of the sea. And I would show you all of it, my love. And then you'd know your death was not in vain. I would show you the drowned lands rising above the waves, and I would show you all the dry lands sinking into the vault of the sea. I would show you the stations of my cross. I would not be so alone, if you could see it too." The whisperer laughs as if she's read my mind and isn't buying any of it. Not one whit. I open my hand and look down at the stone carving. The graven image of the mother. The whisperer is threatening to set all my ghosts free, but I know that she'd have done that by now if she were capable of such a thing. The whisperer laughs and makes a slithering sound. I drift deeper, and the stone in my hand glows like the bioluminescent lure of an anglerfish, light for my eyes only, light that owes nothing to the sun, light born of the chemosynthesis and hydrothermal vents. I sink, and the one whom I could not kill rises from an asphalt runway to sail among the clouds. She stinks of the poppy's venom in her blood. She stinks of incremental, sour deaths. Nothing is happening that I have not set in motion. All of this was planned. If I were a sadist, I would say these things aloud and with these truths taunt the whisperer who taunts me. I would torture the whisperer and take some small relief from the necessary masochism of my every act. Instead, I clench my hand tightly around the stone again, and around me and within me the grey room fills up with the absolute stillness of a hole in the bottom of the sea, and the pressure of 1,000 atmospheres would crush me flat were it not for the invisible fist clenched about me.